This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. And the first story we are looking at is the GDP numbers. So the GDP data has just been announced yesterday and it's 5.7% for this quarter, as opposed to 6.1% in the last quarter. And obviously there's been a slump, and Arun Jaitley in one of his remarks said that this is due to the rollout of GST.
GDP for the first quarter,
First quarter,
came in at 5.7%, much lower than expected. Except for one analyst who predicted 5.7%, most of the others had predicted more.
Yes.
I think the average, if you were to take in most of the estimates, would have been around 6.2%. So it is significantly lower than what is there. And the explanation that most people offer is that this has to do with GST, and also evident in the purchase managers index for last month, which was low, which came in early July. And everyone was waiting to see what the number for August would be. Good news is this number always comes in on the 1st or the 2nd. So today the number is coming, the Nikkei Composite Purchase Managers Index for manufacturing, higher than what it was. It was 49 point something last month. This month it's 51.2. It's just coming. So it does reflect an improvement. I know it's just a number. So the way to understand this is it's a sign of confidence on growth and everything else. And everyone was waiting for this number after yesterday to see whether things would be better or worse. But I want to step back and take a slightly larger picture.
Right.
The larger picture is actually a worrying picture, and I'm not so much worried about the 5.7%. If you were to look at core GVA, GVA is the key component of GDP, gross value added. If you were to look at core GVA, you look at core GVA since last March, and you look at what has happened, it's consistently been going down, and that is worrying. Core GVA is something that leaves out government spending. It leaves out agriculture because agriculture is quite seasonal, and there are various other issues with it. And that is worrying. It's not surprising. And the reason it's not surprising is because what is going to drive growth? There has to be investment. There has to be consumption. And you'll have to look at what is driving growth. When the Indian economy was doing really well, we had significant growth drivers, including exports. Right? I mean, services is what people often speak of. But exports actually were pretty significant in the 2000s, in the middle of the 2000s when we grew really fast. That's not been happening. And we did get a tremendous buffer from oil prices, but that buffer is now gone. So we have to find new growth drivers. And an obvious growth driver is investment, public and private. Private investment is not forthcoming for a variety of reasons, right? I mean, one, I think it's not forthcoming because despite everything that is being said, I'm still not convinced that the ease of doing business in India has improved. And like, for instance, I know that people who constitute this government had very strong words for the previous government when the tax demand against Vodafone was raised, and then that retrospective amendment was made and everything else. But one, they've proceeded down the same road in the same case. So sending a tax notice to Hutchison, Li Ka-shing, telling him, you know, Vodafone not paying, you have to pay, that kind of thing. This is again fairly retrograde, because at the end of the day, this was, as we've always maintained, a transaction that happened outside the country. So you can't change your rules just because you want a piece of that. So that's one reason. And there are a variety of reasons like that. The second reason is, I think some of the measures that have been taken are extremely positive measures. GST, for instance, is a good measure. But the benefits will accrue over time. Digitization, especially the use of Aadhaar. And I know people have divided views, including you. You know, last week you had very strong views on Aadhaar. But I think it is an enabler. I think it's a positive. But again, the benefits will accrue over a period of time. So it is a long haul. You're not going to snap your fingers and see those results. So things aren't happening on the ground. And then, of course, you have what everyone is calling the double balance sheet problem. Banks are in trouble, stress assets. Companies have to resolve this issue. Banks have to resolve this issue. Private investment is not going to happen. So the solution is government investment. But government investment needs to happen in areas where it can have the maximum impact. I think there should also be an effort to move away from things like farm loan waivers and other things. It doesn't really make sense. But that's at the state level. So you have to convince the states also to be fiscally responsible. So it is a combination of circumstances, not helped by GST, which is a disruptor. We've all known that it would be a temporary disruptor. But a PMI data that came out this morning, the Purchase Managers Index data that came out this morning, seems to confirm that it was temporary and that things have started looking up. But we knew that it would be a temporary disruptor. Demonetization was a disruptor and things never really went back to where they were.
Right.
But I don't think you can attribute it to the entire sequence that I've presented. I don't think you can attribute it to just one or two things, right? I mean, I think it's a far more fundamental thing.
Right.
And I think you need to find those new growth drivers. And that is going to be the challenge at this point in time.
So what do you think is the way forward? Is there going to be another rate cut likely? Is that going to help?
No,
I mean,
it's a good question. It's a good question because I think there could be a rate cut. But the question we have to ask, and we've asked it repeatedly, a lot of our op-ed writers have asked this repeatedly, is a rate cut going to help?
Yeah.
Because the larger question, right? I mean, which again, some of our op-ed writers have asked, and it's a good question. It's a fundamental question. Are we at a stage where the ability of monetary policy to boost growth or to combat inflation, are we overstating it? Have there been structural changes in the economy that somehow reduce the efficacy of these monetary measures that we've traditionally used to stimulate growth? And I think that's the question to be asked.
Right.
But it is bad news.
It is definitely.
And while things will get better, it is a long haul. Like I said, I do think GST is a fundamentally transformative move.
Right.
It will make a lot of things easier. It will result in gains. And of course, you need to improve it, which is why I think yesterday what the finance minister said at the conference about reducing the number of slabs in GST. We had that story on page one today. Possibly reducing the slabs is a welcome step.
Yeah.
We knew this would happen. We've been asking for this to happen because while the current GST structure is a tremendous improvement over what was there, it is not as good as what it was originally envisaged. So I think there is room for improvement there. But long haul, it's not going to be a quick fix. It's not as if you're going to suddenly see an improvement in the next quarter.
True. You also mentioned GST as a disruptor. Well, another disruptor has been demonetization. And the RBI data, which has just been released, says that 99% of the banned currency has been returned. So, you know, this whole exercise, which was primarily aimed at, you know, booting out black money and tracking black money, doesn't seem to have worked.
Yeah, I think the way to look at it again is, and we knew by December, I think it was clear that the money was coming back.
Yeah.
So I think the government's objectives have changed over time, although the government hasn't come out and said it. I don't know why they haven't, but because initially the talk was all about extinguishing money and money not coming back into the system. In hindsight, it turns out people with black money are not the kind of people to let go of an opportunity to somehow get it into the system. We ourselves have reported how they were using mules and dishonest bank officials and various other and backdated payments to jewelry companies and everyone else. And then there was a spate of activity, right, to get that money back into the system. And I think by December, the government had stopped talking about these windfall gains and they'd started talking about other objectives, which is what the finance minister listed. Now, I don't want to get into this thing of shifting goalposts because the goalposts have definitely shifted, right?
True.
Initially, it was something else. It is something else now. But if you look at the current situation, I think you can clearly say one or two things. One, the primary objective, the originally stated primary objective was not met. Two, it was disruptive, and especially because if you look at agriculture, for instance, just to take one example, a lot of people give the small-scale industry example, which is a valid example, but I'm going to proffer the agriculture example because we've seen, we had our reporters on the ground traveling across the country looking at one of the root causes of the agrarian crisis at this point in time was the fact that demonetization hit that supply chain really hard at the intermediary level. And the people who bore the brunt of it were the farmers, right? That is a problem, right? I mean, there are far more fundamental problems with agriculture, of course, but I think one of the main causes of what happened this time was this. So I think a lot of people underestimated the impact that it would have. The benefits, as they are now being articulated by the government, the proof of that really lies in what happens now. Because digitization, sure, the number of wallets have increased and various other things have happened, but RBI data is not particularly clear about this because it shows a rise till April and then it shows a little bit of a stagnation and a little bit of a dip. So you'll have to look at it. Change in behavior is not something we should be talking about here because it is intangible. Increase in tax filings is again something that you cannot, I would not offer it as a piece of evidence simply because there is a deadline and then there is an extended deadline and then people file with a fine and various other things. And I think it's till February of this year, I think what 43 million people had filed tax returns or whatever else. Mm. And these are people who file tax returns. Mm. The people who pay taxes is obviously much more than the people who file tax returns, because there are many people who pay taxes who don't file returns. But by the first deadline, there was a 25% more. Have people hurried to pay this year? Mm. Did that link between Aadhaar and PAN force many people to pay it earlier? Right. All kinds of things, right? I don't think the numbers are really comparable. Mm. But one of the things that will show whether this has been a success or not is that I think the government is right in saying that, yes, we have data on all the money that's come back. That's true. And if you look at the number of suspicious business transactions that are reported by banks and financial intermediaries, especially after demonetization, it's zoomed, right? I mean, it's gone up multiples. Mm. And I think not all those obviously point to irregularity or illegality. Some of them do.
Yeah.
So the ability of the tax department to mine that data and to go after them and to do that is something that's going to happen. Obviously, this needs to be done in a way that doesn't spook everyone else, because we don't want a return to Inspector Raj. But I think that is a future benefit.
Right.
It is not a current benefit. And I think so in balance, you'll have to look at it from exactly that perspective.
Right. I mean, do you think that in a nutshell, demonetization was a bad move, or are we still going to wait for some more metrics and, you know, to sort of analyze?
It did not meet its primary objective, right? I mean,
correct.
Which is, there was an initial expectation that a lot of that money would come in. I don't think it was a good idea in hindsight.
Right.
At that time, our editorial position was that it seemed like a good idea.
Right.
In hindsight, I don't think it was such a great idea. And as we've pointed out in today's editorial, I think there obviously needs to be a lot more thought that needs to go into economic policy making.
True. So moving to some politics, there's a cabinet reshuffle expected tomorrow possibly, and the government expects the cabinet to expand and possibly include some regional parties in the cabinet. So what are your views on that?
Reshuffles are always good. Mm. Most reshuffles are driven by political considerations.
True.
Either to generally churn things up or to accommodate a partner, JDU, which is a partner, and you'll have to bring them in, which is entirely understandable. Mm. But I'd also personally like to see reshuffles to be used as an opportunity to rate performance. Look at people who've done well. Look at people who've done badly.
Right.
At least one or two instances over the last 3 years. I don't want to take names, but if you look at what the current government has done, then it's clearly been an effort to move out people who have not particularly performed in an area and replace them with people whom the establishment thinks will perform.
Mm.
And I'm hoping that will happen, because there are clearly, when you look at the union cabinet, you have performers. And then you have people who are coping. Then you have people who are doing badly.
Mm.
Right? I mean, which is the way of life, right? I mean, it's a bell curve.
Right.
Some people who do well, some people who are average, and some people who do badly. So I think it's a good opportunity to do that kind of churn and move ahead, right? I mean, what next? That's one of the questions asked. And I think what next is, I know it's very broad.
Mm.
We have to create jobs. We have to revive growth.
Right.
And what are you going to do to achieve those ultimate objectives? Let's also not forget, elections are due. A lot of elections are due next year. Important year. This year itself, there are a couple of important elections that are due.
Mm.
And then 2019 is not that far away.
Right. So and possibly all this is aimed at 2019.
To a certain extent.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is aimed at 2019, right? I mean, because elections happen every 5 years, I think it's always the government of the day, while trying to push its governance agenda, also keeps an eye on politics, right? I mean, it's very difficult to remove that entirely from the equation.
If they can win UP despite demonetization, you know, right. So moving on, we move to the Mumbai rains, which is, they have had an unprecedented rainfall. And as usual, the drainage system, sewage system, everything has sort of collapsed. The whole city is collapsed and civic bodies don't seem to be doing anything. And it seems to be pretty much the system sort of around the country. We have floods in Bihar. Last year, it was Gurugram, which had floods, then Chennai earlier on. So, I mean, there just seem to be all these natural calamities or disasters.
All
or whatever.
Over the world. Yeah. Not just in India.
Right. You have Harvey in the west.
So the first one is, over the past few years, I think instances of adverse weather phenomenon around the world have increased.
Right.
Right. I mean, it is a reality.
Mm.
It is not something that can be ignored. And these need to be studied, and we need to be able to understand what's happening.
Mm.
Right. Please understand, adverse weather phenomenon, but clearly has a link to climate change.
Mm.
I know the difference between climate and weather, but which is why I said needs to be studied.
Right.
But there has definitely been an increase. Question is also one of how our cities are developed. There's very little planning that goes into it. So in Bangalore, for instance, a lot of development has happened by filling in lakes or in and around lakes, shutting off natural inflows and outflows. That's the same way Bombay has developed, where the damage has been done to mangroves and it has been done to, again, small streams, a mini river of sorts that flows in and flows out and provides a natural form of drainage. In Chennai, a lot of development happened on the Adyar River's floodplains. Shouldn't have happened. Some part of the floodplain itself was damaged, and it continues to happen, right? Which is why floodplains are important, which is why natural age-old systems of inflows and outflows should not be affected and should be kept in mind when you're designing. So that's at the second level. There's a third dimension, and the third dimension is the quality of response. I mean, how good is the quality of response of the local administration? How good is the quality of preparedness of the local administration? And there you have to say that every time something of this sort happens across the country, doesn't matter where, the quality of response is bad, the quality of preparedness is bad.
Zero.
And I think those are things that obviously need to be improved. There needs to be some accountability. There needs to be a specific team of people, a department, an individual who can be assigned the responsibility and then be held accountable for that. But that doesn't happen.
Is Mumbai a glaring failure on India's part to create smart cities?
I think you will have to understand the history of development of Mumbai, starting from, and also understand its geography and, and how it's positioned and everything else. A small group of islands with as dense a population as Mumbai and as many space restrictions as Mumbai needs to be very careful about how it is planned.
Right.
Especially when it comes to issues like drainage of rainwater and things like that. And I think that in the hustle and bustle of development, also enabled by unscrupulous elements, because development often is driven by a lot of unscrupulous developers, I think many of those principles have been long buried, not just in Mumbai. I mean, you look at Bangalore, I mean, who filled in the lakes, right? I mean, who developed around the lakes, cutting off natural inflows and outflows. So I think everyone is to blame. And then who buys houses in those developments? People like us, right? I mean,
so
I think everyone, I know, but everyone is to blame.
Right.
No one really thinks about it when the going is good, right? Even people like us would probably love to live in a, what they call a lakefront development on the 13th floor in a nice house, little realizing how it has been developed, where it has been built.
True.
That happens everywhere. It happens in Gurgaon, it happens in Bangalore, it happens in Faridabad. I'm sure it's happening all over the country. How do you address that? That's the question.
Right.
And then, of course, like I said, how do you deal with the situation? How prepared are you for a situation like what happened in Mumbai? And the answer is not particularly well prepared.
Right. So let's hope somebody is listening and they do their jobs. So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. The Editor's Podcast is also available on iTunes and audioboom.com. Please click on the subscribe button on iTunes to get weekly updates of latest episodes. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.